And now, from the gleaming spires of Chicago, broadcasting to Niflheim, Svartalfheim, Olympus, throughout the nine worlds and beyond, the only Thor podcast hosted by a true descendant of Odin. You are tuned to the immortal sounds of Radio Free Asgard.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Radio Free Asgard. This is episode number 141 coming to you from beautiful Chicago, Illinois, where it's still cold, but not quite as cold as it has been. Well, we're in March now, so you would think that spring would be coming soon, but not really a lot of signs of it yet. Hopefully, though, by the end of the month, we'll be kind of heading that way anyway. So I really don't have much to talk about here at the beginning of the show, so I do have an issue of Thor to cover, so let's just go ahead and get right on to our review.
Cross the rainbow bridge of Asgard, where the booming heavens roar. You'll behold in breathless wonder the God of Thunder, mighty Thor.
And this week we are covering Thor number 169, to nobody's great surprise, I'm sure. Has a cover date of October 1969, retailed for 15 cents. Cover art is by Jack Kirby, inked by George Klein. The cover blurb reads, "The Monster and the Man God," and shows Thor with Mjolnir looking kind of bloodstained and red, flying through a Galactus-shaped hole. Well, at least that's what it looks like anyway. And we have this Galactus-shaped hole in your heart, I guess, and Thor's flying through it. And in the background, we see photostats of various panels from this issue. And they actually are photostats from this issue, and I know because I checked. Anyway, so, incidentally, this issue has been reprinted a couple of different places in Marvel Masterworks Thor Volume 8 and also in The Essential Thor Volume 4. Pick them up at a comic shop near you and you can read along with us. So we open up to the splash page where we have the title of the story, The Awesome Answer. Awesome, dude. And we have Thor confronting Galactus, and this is kind of continuing straight on from where we left off last time. And we have a little bit of a Stan Lee caption here. In the deepest reach of endless space, Galactus and the God of Thunder face each other at last in a fearful truce as the brooding giant slowly tells the secret of his past. Excelsior! Galactus is saying, "And now prepare to hear what none have ever heard." And of course we have the credits. Stan Lee and Jack Kirby created this issue. George Klein was the inker, and the letterer was Artie Simek. And Galactus and Thor are standing on this barren planet, and there's like these dead, I don't know, they don't really look like rocks, but it doesn't look like wood really either. So, I mean, they could be dead trees, I suppose, but or maybe just kind of weird sort of rocks anyway. So, and it's really kind of a spectacular scene here. They're standing on this planet, and there's this great big huge like gas giant sort of planet in the background and a couple of moons and you know, pretty cool Kirby. Yeah, so basically pretty awesome Kirby space as normal. "You have searched for me," says Galactus, "and your quest might have taken an eternity, but I brought you hither, for Galactus is weary of flight, weary of battle. Thou hast spoken of a mighty ship which crashed long ages ago. From whence came yon tragedy-haunted vessel, and what hath it to do with thee?"
"The ship of which you speak was the be-all and the end-all of the one who stands before you. For even in death it was fated to spawn new life."
And we see a flashback here. Flashback to the ship crashing, and it's on this dinosaur planet where, remember, the Watcher was studying these weird, funky dinosaurs. So it's clearly not Earth. And they have this sort of weird, I'm not sure what kind of dinosaur this is supposed to be. Some weird alien dinosaur with sort of armor plates on its spine and sort of ridge on its head that's not really like anything else that you've seen on Earth. And we see that the Watcher's going into the ship. This is a little bit of recap from last time.
One there was who had witnessed the crash, whom men call the Watcher. And we see the Watcher going in the ship, and there's all these dead bodies laying around and wreckage, and you know, people don't look too healthy here.
The crew has perished, all victims of lethal radiation. But still, I sense a trace of life. Somewhere on board, there's a survivor to be found.
And the Watcher eventually finds him.
This one lives, and yet how strange it is. He has been closest to the deadly detonation.
Though, how you would know that? I don't know. Anyway, and the Watcher has this little gadget in his hand, which is shooting some sort of a, I don't know, a ray beam or something at this guy. This is obviously sort of Galactus in his infancy, and he's just this bald dude, and he looks like Superman suffering from kryptonite poisoning. You know how they would draw him with like these green highlights on his skin? That's exactly what this guy looks like.
Young survivor, Galactus, 'twas most surely thee. But not the me of old. It was the me that was yet to be. Not even the Watcher could suspect what he had truly found.
In this panel, Galactus looks like he's wearing fingerless gloves that like they were popular in the 80s. Anyway,
how could he have known it had the power to shatter a planet?
And Galactus shoots a ray out of his hand and blows up this big old rock. It was like, boo. There's no sound effect, but yeah, it's pretty impressive. And Thor's thinking to himself, the very memory of what hath befallen now makes him fly into most towering rage.
And yet you dare think you can challenge Galactus? Thou hast power, true, says Thor, but so doth the son of Odin. Do not taunt me, Thunder God,
and Galactus takes his hand and smashes Thor into the ground.
I talk, I rage, I strike, to forget the hunger that gnaws within.
And Galactus grabs Thor, picks him up in his hand, is holding him like a doll.
But I have no wish to do you harm.
Galactus, thou art sorely troubled.
Yes, my heart is heavy, and a great weariness now lies upon me.
The tale! Thou hast forgotten about the lone survivor and his fate.
Forgotten? How could I ever forget? All that is left to me when the hunger is gone are the dreaded memories.
And he puts Thor down, unharmed, and he's kind of sitting on this green kryptonite rock.
Memories of a time, a life, a world that are lost forevermore. The now dead paradise called Ta,
spelled T-A-A. And we have a full page shot here of a very futuristic planet. And there's these weird elevator things, and people are flying around in soap bubbles. And yeah, it's a very typical Kirby ultra-futuristic kind of world, except people are riding around in bubbles, which is kind of cute.
Ta, a planet so far advanced from any other that there are no words to do it justice. Ta, among the simplest of its many miracles were the thought spheres in which men lived and traveled. Ta, ever changing, ever ancient, ever wondrous to behold.
And we see these people, you know, some of them are walking around on the street, and there's, you know, big giant statues of, I don't know who they are, but there's big giant statues, and there's machines and people wandering around wearing turbans, and they're flying through volcanoes in their bubbles and under the sea where these weird, like this big magenta whale glob sort of thing, and this sort of squid snake. I don't know what it is. Anyway, alien creatures as only Kirby can portray them. And we turn the page here.
But not even the fabled Ta could endure forever.
And we see some sort of a scientist person. He's working in, looks like a forge. Looks like an acetylene torch, and he's inside this plastic bubble, and he's doing something or other. And the people are coming into the room.
He returns at last. Now we will learn our planet's fate.
You do not speak. I cannot speak. Of what use are words at a time like this, a time of dread catastrophe? It is as we feared. The world of Ta is doomed, doomed.
And the people are looking all horrified. And, yeah, they have that look about them, the sort of debauched look, the sort of, decadent sort of like almost like the stereotypical ancient Romans who are really decadent and perverse.
I've been to the farthest end of the cosmos, and this is obviously supposed to be Galactus when he was a person. But my journey was in vain. There is no cure for the creeping plague!
And the people seem pretty horrified by that, and they're like, then we must prepare for the inevitable.
Our race must die in a manner befitting Ta. Yes, the creeping plague had come to Ta, and the greatest brains in all the galaxy were powerless to find a cure.
And we see one of those great brains trying to figure it out. It's like, it's hopeless. Nothing that lives can escape the plague. Even now, the Visi screen shows distant species struck down in their prime. And you see these like weird scrawl-like aliens just kind of falling down dead. And we see another planet where they have all these winged people and they're just kind of dropping out of the sky and choking.
And each passing moment brings it closer, closer to Ta. Well, all we can do is watch and wait. And yet, it is not fitting that all must perish.
So now he's Jor-El. Basically, he's Jor-El now.
Somehow, some way, the glory and the grandeur that are Ta must live. And live they shall, for destiny itself shall find a way.
And he's floating around in his thought sphere, and he sees that people are dying on the planet below.
In the square below, the plague has traveled faster, even further than we'd feared. Already it has reached our heartland.
And yeah, people dying all over the place. And, of course, he leaves his thought sphere, which doesn't seem quite safe to me, but there he is.
Our efforts are useless. With all our skill, we can find no antidote. But even if there is no cure, there must be one living being whose body is immune, one who can survive so that somewhere a vestige of Ta will live on.
But no survivor can be found, and the carnage continued. And even in space, spaceships met their fate, as crews fell helpless at their controls. And you see, because the crews are falling helpless at their controls, the ships are blowing up. So, okay.
Not even the wondrous thought spheres could shield them from the plague.
And you see the thought spheres falling out of the sky and people dying.
And then, where billions had dwelled in glory, only a handful remained. The end is come. Ta shall be no more.
Thus ends an age.
And they're walking through this landscape of people kind of dying in the streets.
There are only enough to assemble one final crew. Since we must die, let it be in flight. We will go where men have never gone. The largest sun in all the world will be our funeral pyre.
The largest sun in all the world? Okay, that is just ridiculous. This guy's already, he's already delirious. The largest sun in all the world.
Go quickly while you can.
And yeah, okay, so I guess he was delusional, and he dies.
Let your flight, your death, be a living monument to Ta, the Ta that is no more.
And so it was done, and we see this green rocket ship taking off and basically flying into the middle of a star. Yeah, okay.
The final flight, the final gallant, futile gesture into the heart of the largest sun in all the universe.
And which apparently is right above Ta. So there you go. So the spaceship is flying towards the middle of the sun. And we see the various astronauts inside the ship. And they're wearing these spacesuits that look kind of like armor or like Spartan armor sort of stuff. And you've got their futuristic Kirby machines and so forth. And they're getting ready to fly into this big old star. And it seems to me that it's all very Pink Floydian. And I'm wondering, because it's the right era, how influenced by Pink Floyd Stan Lee was. Because they're setting their controls for the heart of the sun.
And they are saying, though each of us must surely die, let it be in a blaze of glory in the sun.
Before the plague can reach us.
And we see they're flying in the sun, and they're being blasted by radiation, and they're all get all Kirby crackly and burning up. And Galactus is narrating here.
They wished, they prayed, and then they found fulfillment as the first radioactive blast inundated the star-crossed ship.
Star-crossed? No, they're crossing the star.
They fell. They perished.
All save one. And this one guy is glowing all orange and red and fiery. He's thinking to himself, the others have met their fate, but I feel new life, a strange new force throbbing, bursting within me. And all the while the starship sped like a meteor, no hand to guide it, as it careened through space, and it apparently swerved away from the sun, and it crashed. And that's where we saw the Watcher and all that.
It was then that the Watcher spied the ship, and observed it as it crashed.
That's what I just said. And methinks 'twas there the Galactus came a-bornin'.
Patience, Thunder God, my tale is not yet done.
What of him thou callest Watcher?
His is a power as strange and awesome as my own. He came and saw, and this was the way of it.
And we see that he's studying the sky Galactus, or whatever he is.
He was bound by a solemn oath to do no more than watch, and never interfere in the lives of others. And so he studied what had been, and what was yet to see.
And it looks to me a whole lot like he's interfering here, because he's got this big old machine, and it's more than just looking at the guy. He's doing something to him here.
He beheld an arm, glowing with energy, crackling with raw, living, cosmic power. He saw the power surge and grow till it could not be contained, and blows up his big old explosion,
and the Watcher's looking at it with his little gizmos and not really doing anything.
Until it was consumed by a monstrous fireball of its own making.
And the Watcher is kind of falling back, a little bit intimidated here.
I stand in the presence of power. Power enough to shatter a planet. Power which feeds upon itself, even as I watch. But soon its hunger will be so great, naught but a world can appease it. Mine is the power to destroy it now, before it can harness its total force. But I am pledged to never tamper in the affairs of living beings.
And you see this creature that is becoming Galactus is standing up, and it's all green and crackly and kind of goopy. It's kind of like Gumby on steroids almost. And it starts moving towards the Watcher, and he's like,
he sees me. He senses the danger. If I'm to strike, it must be now. But I cannot. I dare not. I must not. If fate so decrees, then he must live, though galaxies die.
And at that point, Galactus turns into a spaceship, apparently, and takes off. And he doesn't, like, get into a spaceship or anything. He just launches, and he's a rocket. That's really weird. Now, I gather what's going on here is that he actually is taking off in the ship that crashed, but they don't make that very clear.
He departs, and for ages yet uncounted, I may live to regret my decision.
And we get a little more narration here from the Watcher.
Once in space again, the being that had been born placed the other lifeless victims within a cylinder, ejecting them into the void to drift in endless flight. While alone within his ship, the mighty survivor labored long. Learning to control his power, he created suitable and unique attire which could regulate his energy.
And he's basically building Galactus's suit here.
Next, he transformed his ship itself into a chamber in which he could rest and plan while he matured.
And he transforms the ship into this weird cubular thing, and that's the thing that we saw those few issues ago when they found it orbiting that planet and woke up Galactus. You remember that?
Within his silent orbiting incubator, he drifted for countless centuries until the moment came when he would emerge to face the world as Galactus.
Again, the world. He's facing the world. Yeah, and just the world.
But what of the future, says Thor? As long as thou doth live, none can e'er be safe. Stay your hammer, Thunder God. I have no wish to battle. Galactus is weary, and the loneliness of ages rests heavy on me.
The heart of Thor is touched, and so he says in a way that it is obvious that he's not touched.
Thou hast meant no harm to living being, but still have planets fallen by thy hand. Now what is Thor to do?
And Thor starts to whirl his hammer around as though he's going to attack. And a big giant face appears behind him and starts shouting at him.
Thou hast done thy task and done it well.
Oh, Father Odin. Thy mission is done. Thy penance served. Thanks to thee, my prince, I have learned what I must know. Galactus's time is not yet come. But there be need of thee on planet Earth,
And instead of letting Thor clobber Galactus, Odin, in his image form, shoots his scepter at Thor, and Thor disappears. We then shift scenes to Earth, where the Thermal Man, remember that big blue ugly monster thing, is rampaging through the city, knocking down signs and streetlights and crushing cars, and the police are trying to shoot him, but it's not doing any good, and he's shooting eye beams out of his eyes and just generally wrecking havoc as these super robot things do. And the police are saying, "No weapons of ours can stop the Thermal Man." And then the Warriors 3 and Baldur show up on the scene, and Hogan, Fandral, and Baldur taking up the front, and Volstagg kind of taking up the rear.
"In the absence of Thor, who strikes for mankind?" says Hogan.
"I say thee, Baldur, and Hogan and Fandral."
"Forget not, valiant Volstagg. Onward, Asgardians," says Fandral.
And they go attacking the Thermal Man, and they end up getting thrown back by a big explosion of thermal energy. And the Thermal Man seems to have defeated them in one panel. So that's pretty impressive. And the Thermal Man is kind of looking around, and nobody dares to attack him anymore. And we get a little bit of Stan Lee exposition here.
"Triumphant, the creature stands, surveying all around him with emotionless, unfeeling eyes. Created half a world away to bring America to its knees, the artificial being sways and turns and lumbers on. And none there are to stop it."
"It's not alive. It's some sort of mechanical creation."
"What difference does it make? It can still destroy us all."
But then another player takes the stage. As the curtain raises on grim drama anew, the God of Thunder strikes the Earth once more. And we see Thor flying through space, sent there by Odin, landing in New York City. And he is surrounded by this cascade of energy. And we have next issue, Thunder over New York. And that is Thor number 169. All right, so I do have a few things to say about this, of course, but we will be doing so right after this.
Hey, Kids Comics!
Hey, Michael!
Yeah?
We need to do a new promo.
A new one?
A new one.
Why?
Because we've moved.
Moved?
Moved. We've moved to a new place. We still read comics.
We do. We still talk about comics.
Because you can't do a comic book podcast unless you read and talk about comics, because that's kind of stupid. But now, we have a new episode still available every Thursday, but at twotruefreaks.libsyn.com.
Hey, Kids Comics!
So remember, Hey, Kids Comics has moved to twotruefreaks.libsyn.com. Still, every Thursday. That'll do, won't it?
Yeah. And of course, I do have a few thoughts about the issue. Now, we've covered a large number of Thor issues, and including most of the Silver Age at this point that we've covered. And we've seen a lot of really dumb stuff. I mean, and of course, it's all stuff that we love, but some of it is downright stupid. But I'm going to say something kind of provocative here. And I think that the origin of Galactus is about the dumbest thing ever. Just think about it for a second. So you have the super futuristic utopian society, this planet called Ta, which is a race of Superman. It's basically it's Krypton at this point, because you have this disaster that's coming. We have the scientists who are investigating it, and they find out they can't stop it. Okay, so this is Krypton. And they decide that what they're going to do is, well, you've got this plague coming, but he's rationalizing, okay, well, isn't there one person who can survive this plague? And he's trying to find a way to survive this plague. All right, so far, so good. And, of course, you get this idea of rocketing people away from Ta and maybe surviving. Okay, except that he's not just rocketing people away from Ta. He's rocketing them into a star. Which and it's like this heroic suicide, which is going to go against everything that he's been saying in the last couple pages about wanting to preserve something of Ta for the future. So basically, Galactus is so afraid of getting sick of this plague that he decides to commit suicide by diving into a star, and then somehow accidentally survives and becomes Galactus. Okay. Is that the dumbest plan ever or what? Seriously. I mean, so he became Galactus because he was an idiot. I guess it worked in some kind of weird way, but I don't know. To me, that doesn't exactly read like a very good origin. And really, other than the origin, not a lot happens in the story. This is obviously a framing device for the telling of Galactus's origin, which is all fine and good. But again, it's not the most exciting story. We basically have, you know, Galactus throwing a temper tantrum, grabbing Thor in his hand, slamming him down the ground, and then basically just talking to him. And that's okay. And then we have at the end, we have Odin just kind of coming in and interrupting things. And that works, I guess, as far as that goes. I definitely am seeing a lot more of Stan in the story than of Jack. And take of that what you will. Artwork is pretty strong throughout the issue, I have to say. Once again, I like the inks of George Klein. It's definitely a nice change from what we've been seeing lately with Vinnie Coletta. And of course, next issue, actually I think for the next two issues, is going to be Bill Everett on inks, which is different yet. So it's interesting to see, just in the space of a few issues, how different Kirby's pencils look when inked by different inkers. And I have to say, you know, I kind of like them better than Coletta most of the time. We got some great panels here, and in particular the full page spread that we have of Ta and their bubble world where everyone is flying around in thought bubbles and all that kind of stuff. That's a pretty cool looking world, and you know, nobody does this futuristic landscapes like Kirby does. We also get some really cool instances of Kirby crackle and lightning and energy, and to my mind, nobody has really managed to capture that in the way that Kirby did. A lot of people have tried, and it always seems to fall flat when people other than Kirby have tried to do Kirby crackle. I will say, you know, there's a few exceptions. I think Johnny Romita Jr., as we've talked about in the past, is one of those people who does it well. But nobody really does it quite like the King. And I think that that's one of the problems that we had with Marvel Comics throughout the 70s, and everyone is trying to dog Kirby, especially early on in the 70s when, you know, Kirby imitation is the house style. And it just doesn't work quite as well as anywhere else. I'm liking the inks of George Klein, I have to say. Klein brings a different quality to the pencils than Coletta does. Not necessarily worlds better, but I think that Kirby works better with a smoother inker. And we've talked about that on the show before. The two inkers that I think really do the best on Kirby, to my mind, are Chick Stone and Joe Sinnott. And unfortunately, we didn't have Chick Stone inking Kirby all that much. We had a little bit of it back in the Journey into Mystery days, but we really didn't see a lot of it in the years after that. Sinnott, on the other hand, one of the classic Kirby inkers, and of course, you worked together on the Fantastic Four for 100 issues, which really, you know, was pretty awesome. All right, so thanks very much for listening, folks. Once again, you can email the show. The email is radiofreeasgard@gmail.com. And don't forget, we're going to be appearing at C2E2 the last weekend of April. And you can come find us over in Podcast Alley at Table D4. And with that, it's back over the Rainbow Bridge, back to Midgard. And we'll see you next week here on Radio Free Asgard. Radio Free Asgard is the property of Tom Harris USA Productions, which is totally responsible for its content. The Mighty Thor, his supporting cast, and the various stories that we feature on the show are copyright Marvel Comics and are presented for review and educational purposes, and we hope you find them entertaining as well. Musical selections from Eden, the Invincible Sword of the Elvesmith, are copyright Motsvent and are used with permission. If you like what you've heard on the show, we hope you'll tell your friends, or leave us an iTunes review, or even join our Facebook group. We do love hearing from our listeners. And if you didn't like it, well, oh well, we'll try to do better next time. Once again, thank you very much for listening to Radio Free Asgard.